This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 63rd State House District next year. The current representative, State House Speaker Jace Bolger, cannot run again because of term limits. One Democrat and two Republicans are running to represent the district, which includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. Marshall School Board President Vic Potter is seeking the Republican nomination for the State House seat, and he joins us. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
We're also joined today by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp.
Thanks so much, Gordon.
And Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thanks for having me.
Vic Potter, why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and why you're running for State House?
Okay, it's a short presentation. I started my career back in early 80s at James Rivers Paper Company in Kalamazoo, which is at that time Brown Paper Company. I worked there for 10 years, decided I wanted to be on my own, so I bought Butts Towing Automotive in 1990. Since then, I've become very heavily involved in the community of Marshall and in Calhoun County area. I've been on the Marshall School Board for 12 years, been president 8 of the 12. I'm on the Calhoun County Fair Board. I'm the chairman of the board of the Chamber of Commerce of Marshall. Up until a year and a half ago, I was chairman of the Marshall Township Planning Commission. I moved to the city, so I had to give that one up, even though my business still resides in the township. And I'm a 22-year member of the Marshall Exchange Club, been officer 20 of the 22 years. So I believe in community, and I believe in developing community and children, which is why I like the fair in the school, because our children are future leaders. So, and I own Buzz Towing Automotive, and I'm a small business owner.
Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. First question for Vic Potter.
Sure. What's causing you to seek out a statewide position at this time?
I think Marshall has done a lot of collaborative. I know they've done a lot of collaborative efforts. We combine Marshall School, Marshall High School, and Albion High School. Our alternative high school program is now housed at KCC facility at 26 Mile Road, exit 119 and 94. And we reached out and we saved taxpayers money. We had a bond issue. We had $300,000 in a bond to build on another room for the alternative high school. We wound up collaborating with Kellogg Community College. And doing that, we can rebate that some of that money back to the community. We also had $800,000 in a bond for a bus garage. We collaborated with Midwest Bus of Marshall, which is a private entity, and that's working out fine. We have our own meters, and otherwise we're getting free office space and things. So we're getting ready within the next 6 months to rebate $800,000 back to the community on the bond. So the biggest reason I'm running is I'm also on the MEDA board. I forgot to mention earlier. And MEDA is LFDA, DDA, and Chamber into one unit for economic development purposes. Well, there again, we had to do a lot of collaboration. We had to break down silos. So I think in Lansing, we got to stop the Democrat-Republican thing so much as what's best for the people and make it work. So I think my collaboration efforts through the years, my leadership resume through the years, make me a good candidate.
Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
The Albion-Marshall High School merger it's pointed to as a success by some people. Is this something that you support, seeing consolidation when it comes to services, to schools? And if so, what role do you think the state should have in that?
Well, the state needs to set some guidelines, but right now Marshall is the example of doing this. We are looked at up in Lansing as, hey, this worked. We took two economic different communities. We took two racial different communities, and we put the schools together without a hitch. There was a plan in place. The superintendents of both districts got together, had kids together. Albion College participated with us and helped us have a symposium for the students to do things. Star Commonwealth helped us. There again, there was a lot of collaboration. Star Commonwealth, Albion College, KCC, all these people helped us do this. It wasn't just us. But that's my point. If everybody reaches out to each other and works together, this can happen. We have many districts in our Calhoun County alone that are very small districts. And we as a county and state can't afford to pay all these superintendents, all these business managers, and all the things that incorporate into school finance. If we can get the cost cut down and we use our money wisely, the funding isn't as bad as it sounds.
If you were in the state legislature and there are other school districts which are considering some sort of consolidation, what would you want to do to make it easier for them, or what would you want to do to perhaps provide incentives that would allow some more consolidation among school districts?
When we did ours, we went to Lansing and got a grant for $350,000 to keep a couple of advisors on and a couple other things on to help us through this process. So there's grant money, and then it's in the budget this year also, not necessarily for us, but for other districts who decide to do this. And Marshall started that, and it's in the budget again this year. So you have to work with the individual districts that want to do it, but there is ways of doing it, and we've proved it, and there's money for it.
You mentioned there's a lot of small districts. Do you believe there are too many school districts right now in the state of Michigan?
For the size of populations that we have and in the residents of Michigan, yes, we do have. In Calhoun County, Athens, Chickancha, Marlee, I forget the other one, are all less than 300 students. I'm not saying it's the district's fault. I'm just saying there's a lot of expense that's going out in administration, different things of those districts. Marlee, our superintendent, was superintendent for Marlee for 2 years, and they paid us a stipend for him to do that. So maybe you don't consolidate schools, maybe you consolidate services. Our business manager was the business manager for Albion, and Albion paid us so much to do that. So there's other ways without consolidating that you can make it cheaper by collaboration.
I mentioned incentives, but, you know, with what you just mentioned there about, you know, the administrators for a school district of, you know, 300 and, you know, similar administration for a much larger school district. Should the state be more aggressive? Should they be telling districts that they have to cut costs in some way, at least share resources if they are that small?
I would say they shouldn't be dictated. The district should have no sense to do that. They should be using their taxpayer dollars the way they're supposed to be using them. They shouldn't be told. And I think that when they get told, it's too late, because when they get told, it's when you're in deficit. When you're in deficit, you've got to start doing reports. So hopefully the districts are wise. I don't think states should dictate each district, but the districts should use the resources and use the school boards, and we're elected for a reason. And one of the reasons is financial. Make sure we're financially sound. If we're getting to a point where we're not financially sound, then they should have enough sense to do what they have to do before the state steps in. Once the state steps in, then it's kind of not too good.
Yvonne?
I wanted to ask you about the Detroit Free Press. It has a big investigation on charter schools. And given your background with education, I wanted to find out what your view would be regarding the need for perhaps further transparency or further oversight. National Heritage Academies, for example, according to the press, would qualify as, you know, the second largest school district in Michigan. And right now the Free Press is finding that perhaps the transparency is not what taxpayers might think it would be. So, you know, if you got into the state house, would you take a look at charter schools? Or do you have concerns?
I already have concerns of charter schools. And most of it is they don't have the same standards we have. That's the main concern. The charter schools are here for a reason. They're here because public schools didn't do their job. So if public schools did their job in the first place, they wouldn't be here. But that being said, they're here on taxpayer dollars without the same mandates. So that needs to change. They need to be apples to apples. And then in the meantime, if the districts get strong and do what they're supposed to do, I hate to use the word force out, but you can, it's a competitive world. So that raises yourself above the competition, but as long as it's fair competition.
Jennifer?
Roads. Would you support an increase in taxes or fees to get the funding we need for improvements, or what's your plan?
I have different plans, and I won't say plans. I'll say I have different things to look at. There's been a lot of people spend a lot of time on this road issue, and I'm not privy to all the stuff that they've had to be privy to. So I'm not going to sit here and be a professor of something that I'm not sure about. But I will tell you, I believe that we should take the sales tax on the gas pump and put it to the roads instead of the general fund. And I believe the voters should have an opportunity to vote on a 1% tax sales tax increase. And then in that way, the voters have a right to have a say in what's going on. And I think that would be a lot easier to swallow if they had a choice. The other thing I think is we need to reform some other things. And I don't know how far we want to get into this, but we need to reform welfare. We need to call it workfare. We need to have people quit living off entitlements and being generational about it. We need to start realigning some money that's going the wrong places and put it to the roads instead of, I don't care if a person's on welfare, and there's some people who need it, there's people who lost their job, there's a lot of different reasons. But when it becomes generational, and it becomes that you're on it for 10 years, 12 years, when you start having children from five different dads, and you start having these kids and these kids, why are we paying for all that? That money could be going to roads. We got to realign some things, and we got to make people got to have self-esteem. They got reason to get up in the morning, and these entitlements don't get that to them.
Well, we've gone a little bit off roads.
The funding is the money you can save on one end, you can put to the roads. Is what I'm trying to get to.
Okay, how do you then determine who it is that is truly needy from those who may be, I guess, as you see it, gaming the system?
Well, for lack of a better word, gaming the system. I don't know how you determine that. I'm not an expert. I do know this. If you have generations on welfare, it's a way of life more than a need. And I know that if you get out and do something, I'm going to give you an example. There's a potential of a plant coming to Marshall that they want to grow peppers. It's a greenhouse plant. I don't know if it's going to come or not, but they're thinking about it. They want to hire 150 laborers. So my point is, okay, they say that there's not a workforce. Okay, there is a workforce. The welfare office is the workforce. They become the employment agency. You go to the welfare office, I need 150 people. They should be able to round up 150 people and get them over to you. Because there's 150 people that are probably able to work that aren't working.
Well, are they able, though, to do the job that these employers need done? Do they have the right training and those sort of things? Because that's one of the big complaints about that you'll hear from employers is that the workforce here is not well-trained for a lot of the jobs they need.
My role on the META board, we've already talked about this. One of the things you do in that regard, first of all, it's labor. These are laborer jobs. So those can be trained fairly easy. The other thing you can do, Marshall is already doing this. We're doing career-ready versus college-ready at high school level. And we have industry come in once a year. We had 25 of them this last month that came in and showed their wares and how they do things and what to expect. The thing you can do, let's say Eaton's or let's say Strikers over here in Kalamazoo, let's say they hire 8 people that don't have college degrees and need to be trained. Give them a tax break on those 8 people for the first year. And then the student who gets trained to do those signs a 5-year contract because he got a free education. And so the company got what they wanted. They trained people the way they wanted them. The people are working and they're off the rolls and they're producing to the society. And they got a small tax break for doing it. So,
this is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Vic Potter. He is a candidate for State House in Michigan's 63rd District, which includes both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties or parts thereof. He's the president of the Marshall School Board. We're also joined by Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer and Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zip. Yvonne?
I wanted to ask, you're talking a little bit about generational welfare. Mm-hmm. What about the children? I mean, is it just too bad you lost the parent lottery?
I wouldn't say that. I would say what you have to keep in mind is you got to break the cycle somewhere, somehow. So somehow you need to instill into the family model that it's not a way of life that's going to prosper you down the road. So it doesn't happen overnight, is what I'm trying to say. You got to start leaning towards it and working towards it. If you never work towards it, you never get it.
Sure, but in the meantime, you know, those kids need to eat and...
Oh, and they and they are. But how many of the kids... I guess I was at a store the other day. I was at a convenience store. And I seen a person come in there. They got 2 packs of cigarettes and 2 large pops. And they used a bridge card. What'd the kids get all that?
We all started this, however, with a discussion
about roads.
But you said there may be savings here. But what a lot of the reform welfare advocates have found, including some pretty conservative ones, is that up front you're going to have to spend some money. In other words, you're going to have to be able to get people to jobs. You're going to have to make sure their kids are taken care of. So, you know, if you're going to reform welfare, is that necessarily going to lead to savings that can go into roads?
It will, as in a. I would say 2-3 year time it'll start saving. And the bottom line is we're going the wrong direction. We're getting nothing now for what we're paying, so let's get something for what we're paying. I don't care if you're able to work and you're on welfare and you have elderly people who need the yard rigged, you need this done, send them over and do it. Make them have a meaning to get up in the morning. It's not all about tomorrow you're going to be working. It's about being responsible for the money you're getting. Back in the 30s, they had what they called workfare. Back in the 30s, you got a check, but you had to go do something for it. So why do we get away from all that? In the meantime, I knocked on some doors in Kalamazoo the other day, and one of the ladies, I'm just trying to give you an idea of where I think some of the people are going. The husband was all for what I was saying, and the lady says, well, what about a working wage? I said, you tell me welfare is a working wage? She went in the House.
Jennifer?
Would you have supported a hike in the minimum wage when Lansing voted on it?
I would not have. My philosophy on that is let private industry and private business do their thing. There is a minimum wage law, and it's been there for years. All you're doing, in my mind, some of the minimum wage jobs, as McDonald's and Burger King's and the different things, were set up on the intent of high schoolers and early college kids having incomes. They weren't made for career jobs, unless you're in management or something. The problem is, you start raising all this stuff, they're going to raise the price of their goods, and you're going to have a zero net effect, if not worse than that. So all you're going to do is drive the prices up. And I'm not sure the minimum wage is going to cover the price increases of all this stuff.
Do you think there should be no minimum wage?
I think the minimum wage has been set a long time ago. I think that should needs to be yes, I think there should be a minimum wage. But I don't think it should be keep getting raised by people that don't understand business.
Well, how do you raise it, though? Because if we had kept the minimum wage where it was in, you know, when I was going to high school, it would be almost, you know, nothing in today's dollars. So
well, right now
should you tie it to inflation?
You could. The problem is, here's the problem with minimum wage if you get to $10 an hour. It used to be when you hired in somewhere, you worked your way up. Now you're coming in and what the other people are more than as same as what more somebody's been making for 3 or 4 years that they're doing that kind of a job. So you got to be careful how you do that. And you got to look at the overall, what's it costing, what's it going to do to the cost. Everybody who raises the minimum wage has to charge more for their product. So what is that? Now, most companies, myself included, I've always paid more than minimum wage. You know, I started them out at minimum wage, and a month or two later, they proved themselves that they're okay to go, then I raise them up. So it should be tied to inflation, but not necessarily just a flat figure. We have a starting point, whenever that was, then inflation from thereafter.
Yvonne?
The minimum wage didn't go to 10. It went to 9.25.
And not for a couple years yet.
Right. So it's going to be a
stepping stone.
Right.
Yeah.
9.25 to you sounds too high. Do you have a figure in mind that you felt would have been more appropriate?
I don't have an exact figure, no.
Okay.
I just know in my own business, I always paid more than minimum wage. I start them out, and then once they move on, I let them go up. I don't have a figure in mind. I just hope that those type of jobs aren't what people are trying to live off of for careers, that's all.
Sure, but if you've got to get a job, any job,
to feed
your family.
Right.
I mean, a lot of the folks in those jobs are in their 30s. They're not.
They are starting to be, yes. Or their second incomes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you support the plan which is on the August ballot to phase out the personal property tax?
I do. We need to be business friendly, and we're one of the few states that have that plan. And if we want to grow economically, we have to be business friendly. And we've lost a lot of things to Indiana. Marshall lost a plant that looked at us for VW, Volkswagen, that went to Tennessee. So you have to look at different things like that. And I think we should get rid of it. I think we should get rid of it, and I hope that we do get rid of it, and I think it'd be more business friendly.
Jennifer?
The so-called pension tax, elimination of a full income tax exemption for retiree pensions. This year, you've heard it a lot during campaign season. Democrats are saying, we vow to repeal the pension tax. Where do you stand on that?
I wasn't necessarily for it when it came in, but we had to do something. And now that we have it, I don't like it, but I don't know how we replace it right now. So I would, if I was there, I'd vote stay status quo until we find another avenue to replace it.
Would you want to explore that? I mean, would you want to look around for some other revenue?
I would. But until then, I don't want to just say I'm going to drop it to drop it. I want to make sure we got something to replace it with.
Any ideas of where you might look?
I don't know. We need more money for schools, more money for roads, more money for this, more money for that. Where do you look? You got to look at everything.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans speaking with Vic Potter, a Republican candidate for State House in Michigan's 63rd District, which includes parts of Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. He's also the president of the Marshall School Board. We're joined today by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman and Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp. Yvonne?
Would you support the expansion of the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act to include homosexuals?
The Constitution basically says everybody should be treated equal. Mm-hmm. And I stick with the Constitution. as written. I stick with the Constitution as written.
So, yes?
Yeah.
How about expanding? Are you in favor of legalizing same-sex marriage?
I am not.
Jennifer?
There's concerns from those who say if you amend the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, for example, a landlord, they can say, hey, my religious rights are being infringed on because I don't agree with the way a person lives their life or their sexual orientation. If we put that amendment, how do we deal with those who say that their own religious rights are being violated?
I guess if they feel that way, they shouldn't rent to the people that they're talking about. We have a constitution in place, and I don't think we should start changing the constitution for every little thing that comes along. And if a person doesn't like the way a person lives, and
but if we amend it, they would not be allowed to say no.
They would be protected from discrimination.
Yeah, but so. Well, they shouldn't be discriminatory anyway. When you get right down to it, there's two different questions here. The question is: does gay rights are they equal to everybody else's rights in marriage? And the other question is, what's their rights otherwise? And in my mind, they have certain rights now. They have a choice to do with their to live the way they want to live. And that's still their choice, no matter what happens. But I am not for legalizing same-sex benefits and same-sex marriages.
Okay, but Jennifer's question specifically is about a landlord who says, hey, my religious beliefs are such that I don't want to rent a place to a same-sex couple. But, you know, under the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, if that's amended to extend protections for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people, at least in theory, they would be told this is public accommodation. You have to rent to them if you're
that's
renting
correct.
To the public.
Yep.
So are you okay telling that landlord then they have to rent to the same-sex couple?
Well, I guess you look at it, I'm not okay for telling any landlord they can rent to any particular person. There's different reasons you don't rent to different people, whatever that reason may be. But in saying that, I don't think that should be held against anybody as renting.
It should be illegal to deny
yes.
public accommodations to someone based
right.
on sexual orientation.
Right, it should not be. Yeah, that's correct.
In your opinion. Yvonne?
I wanted to ask your views on possibly decriminalizing marijuana, maybe not legalizing, but, you know, would you support the decriminalization of it?
I'd have to see more facts and figures on that. On the surface, I would say, yes, I would support that because we have way too much court time and prison times and stuff. Our prison costs are way, way high in Michigan, and I don't know how much of it, quite a bit of it is due to drug, different issues of drugs, and I have mixed feelings on that because I own a towing company and we tow a lot of cars from the highway that have a lot of drugs in them that's going to different communities that I hate to see happen. But if you're a dealer, that's one thing. If you're just got a personal use amount with you, that's another thing.
Don't you also tow some cars where people have had too much to drink and
yes.
run off the road?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Jennifer?
Medical marijuana. It's been approved by voters.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you stand on that? Do you think there is that should be allowed? Do you think there is enough access for those who have a medical marijuana card?
I think there is, and quite frankly, it doesn't matter what I think. The voters voted in. So,
do you think the state should be putting any more restrictions on it, any more regulations, or do you think where things stand right now, it should be allowed to play out?
I think it should be allowed to play out.
I want to go back to roads because we kind of
okay.
got off that.
That.
We got off that.
I'm sorry.
Path. No, that's fine. I guess what I want to know is, are there situations under which you would support an increase in the gas tax or vehicle registration fees or both?
I'd rather study the 1% sales tax increase first.
That you want to put before voters.
Right. I'd rather try that first. And then keep in mind, I don't have all the knowledge and all the if, ands, and what's, and buts that they've studied the last 6 months to a year. So I'm not going to sit here and be a professor about it. So I'd like to get all the information they have before I say what I would or wouldn't do. I do know if you go 1%, we're pretty low state on sales tax. So I do know if we went up 1%, that would not be it would not be good, but be better than gas tax of going up 19% or whatever, 25%, whatever they're talking about. So I guess it's lesser two evils. And if you do the gas tax, you really don't vote on, but sales tax you do vote on. So at least that way the consumer has a choice to weigh in.
Vehicle registration fees, would you want to leave them where they're at, or would you consider raising those to raise the revenue for roads?
There again, I have to wait to see how the figures. Right now, I'd say I'm not for that until I know more, until I know about the sales tax and how that equates.
Yvonne?
You talked a lot in the beginning about collaboration and the importance of it. That certainly is not something that has been perhaps on view in Lansing to a huge degree. It's certainly also not unique to Michigan. How can one person try to change a culture of bipartisan, you know, toward bipartisanship?
Through my experiences with what I've already done. How did a small group of people go to Albion and go to Marshall and change that whole culture? That's just a small spot of the whole state. So I've already got the experience of doing that. So I can take it to the next level and do it. It's not one person, by the way. When you go to Lansing, in my mind, your first month there, you get to know who's there, what they're about, what do they want, what do they want to accomplish. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. You need to know what your partners are about. And then in doing that, you'll find some people that like that collaboration idea. You find some people that want that. But you got to go. You got to know what the mix is before you start doing it. And then you align yourself with the people who want to do that kind of stuff. I won't be the only one, trust me. When people find out there's another person. Sometimes people are afraid to speak out and do different things. I'm not. So once you get there, people say, oh, hey, I like that idea, but I just don't want to say anything. So I think you might find more people there that might cooperate than you think. We found that with Albion Marshall.
Jennifer?
Who you may potentially follow to represent this district may be described as some as a polarizing figure, Speaker Bulger. How do you think he's done?
Over well, real well. I don't know that he's polarizing. I know Jace very well, actually. When you get to Lansing, you're not going to please everybody. And some decisions, tough decisions have to be made, no matter where you're at. And if you're not afraid to make tough decisions, people aren't going to like you sometimes. They're not going to like your decisions sometimes. That's part of what you do. It's part of what I do in my everyday life with chamber and schools and all that stuff. You just do what you do. The Marshall Albion thing wasn't very popular either at the time. But we made it popular, didn't we? So I wouldn't use the word polarizing in my mind. I just say he made some tough decisions. I think the legislature made some tough decisions. I think the governor made some tough decisions. And they ought to be applauded for the decisions. Bomb food, as far as I'm concerned. They should have made a decision on the roads, but they didn't. But up to that point, they made tough decisions, and I can't blame somebody for doing that.
Any concern that scandals that Bulger was involved in may have to work on rebuilding trust in the district at all?
I'm not worried about that. I'm not Jace Bulger. I'm Vic Potter. I run on what I do. So anything he did or didn't do doesn't have nothing to do with me.
We're down just a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about a little contrast and compare here, perhaps with your opponent in this Republican primary. If we kind of look at it, just a quick thumbnail sketch, you're both in government now in your own way. You're in positions of leadership. There's nobody here that's kind of coming in from the outside and storming the gates and that sort of thing. We have a couple of candidates who at least on the surface appear to be rather similar. So what would you say to the voter out there who looks at Vic Potter, looks at Dave Mattern and says, boy, there seem to be some similarities. How do I pick which one of these I'd like to have on the ballot in November?
I would say I don't know Dave Mattern very well. He seems like a very nice gentleman, but as far as knowing him, I don't know him. So I can't answer that part of it. All I can answer is my experiences and what my history says I will do. My history says I'll collaborate. My history says I'll be out there and I'll do what's right. And I can't say anything about somebody I don't know. So all I can do is run on what I do.
Vic Potter, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Vic Potter is a candidate for State House in Michigan's 63rd District. That includes parts of both Kalamazoo and Calhoun counties. He's also currently the president of the Marshall School Board. And we want to thank Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thank you.
And Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp.
Thanks, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.